This morning, we're going to start talking about a series that's called The Right Stuff and ask the question, what will it take for our church to succeed? And it's all about that. How will we be his instruments in this world? I want to start by reading from Luke chapter 9. And this is going to be there's two stories here. And this is going to be the foundation of what we talk about today. But I want you to keep that in mind. What does it mean to succeed as a church? But let's read it together. Luke chapter 9, verses 1 through 6, and then 10 through 17. You can follow along in our app and take notes. If you've got our app on your phone or your device, you could also follow along. If you're watching online, there's a note section, I know, in our app connected to the online link. But also here, you can watch on the screen, or you can just follow along in your own Bible. Wouldn't that be a novel idea? So let's follow along. Luke chapter 9, starting in verse 1. This is what it says. When Jesus had called the 12 together, he gave them power and authority to drive out all demons and to cure diseases. And he sent them out to proclaim the kingdom of God and to heal the sick. And he told them, take nothing for the journey. No staff, no bag, no bread, no money, no extra shirt even. Whatever house you enter, stay there until you leave that town. And if people do not welcome you, leave their town and shake the dust off your feet as a testimony against them. So they set out and went from village to village, proclaiming the good news and healing people everywhere. When the apostles returned, they reported to Jesus what they had done. And then he took them with him, and they withdrew by themselves to a town called Bethsaida. But the crowds learned about it and followed him. And he welcomed them and spoke to them about the kingdom of God and healed those who needed healing. Late in the afternoon, the 12 came to him and said, send the crowd away so they can go to the surrounding villages and countryside and find food and lodging because we're in a remote place here. He replied, you give them something to eat. And they answered, we have only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, unless we go and buy food for all this crowd. About 5,000 men were there. But he said to his disciples, have them sit down in groups of about 50 each. And the disciples did so, and everyone sat down. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke them. Then he gave them to the disciples to distribute to the people. They all ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over in the end. Father, I just pray that you would open our ears and our eyes to hear your word, to understand what you want to say to us today. We are all here participating in this moment for a reason, and I pray that we would take advantage of this moment we have together. In your name, Jesus. Amen. What will it take for our church to succeed? Notice I didn't say survive. Too often we get caught up in just trying to survive. I know I do. What will it take for our church to succeed? And there are lots of ideas out there, lots of books published and podcasts run about how a church should succeed or could succeed and the things you gotta have, the stuff you need to be a successful church. You gotta have good music. You gotta have dynamic preaching. You gotta have trustworthy leaders. You gotta have fun children's ministries and cool youth ministries. You gotta have something for college age, singles, young adults, married people, men, for women, for seniors, for the family pet. You gotta have all that stuff. You gotta have comfortable seats. You gotta have projection and videos, and you gotta have powerful altar times or ecstatic moments of worship. There are lots of ideas about how to make the organization and experience of church successful. And we spend a lot of time focusing on how to make the organization and experience of church successful. But is that what it means for the church to be successful? I think the first thing we need is a solid definition of what Jesus expects us to do, because that's our definition of success. There's all kinds of stuff we could be doing. What's the right stuff? And that's what this series is called, that we're going to be talking about the next few weeks. What's the right stuff? And over the next 3 weeks, we're going to look at 3 different answers to that question of what the right stuff is, and then how we can succeed at having the right stuff. We're going to see what the right stuff is today in the beginning, and then we're going to ask, okay, what does it take for our church to have the right stuff, to succeed at the right stuff? And there are going to be 3 answers over the next 3 weeks. Today, the one answer we're going to look at is this. What will it take for our church to succeed at having the right stuff? It depends. The answer doesn't depend. I don't mean that it depends, you know, on our situation and our circumstances. The answer doesn't depend. The answer is, it depends. In other words, it, the church that succeeds at having the right stuff and accomplishing Jesus' mission, is the church that depends completely on Jesus for what it needs. And there are two things that we learn from these two stories we read today. Two things that we need to depend on Jesus for in order to have the right stuff and be the church he calls us to be, to succeed at doing this. And so here we are in Luke chapter 9, and it really sets this up perfectly for us. This is what Luke is trying to communicate, because when you get to Luke chapter 9, the story shifts. Jesus' life shifts here in Luke chapter 9. He's from Galilee. He's from that area. He's been doing his mission all around Galilee. And now in chapter 9 of Luke, the story shifts and Jesus turns and he's going to head to Jerusalem. He's going to start walking down to Jerusalem, where he will eventually be tried and falsely accused and convicted and murdered on that cross and buried in that tomb, and he will rise again and he will then depart. And so we start in chapter 9 of Luke, it starts that journey down that pathway. What's going to happen when that's all done and Jesus leaves? That's the question that kind of hangs over from this point on. What's going to happen? And so Luke, starting in chapter 9, marks the beginning of Jesus preparing his disciples for what it will mean for them to be the church after he goes, to plant and build and begin and start and launch the church and keep accomplishing his mission once he is crucified and buried and rises again and then departs. What will they need to do to succeed at being the church? And so Jesus starts by defining what success is, what the right stuff is for them and for us. That's what you find, and that's what verse 1 in those first few verses are about. Jesus sends them on this mission, and he wants them to understand this is what it means to be the church. So look back at verse 1 again. When Jesus had called the 12 together, he gave them power and authority to drive out all demons and to cure diseases. And he sent them out to do what? To proclaim the kingdom of God and to heal the sick. And I think we can take those two verses and break it down. There's just two things that Jesus expects the disciples to do, his followers to do, his church to do. And I think we can give them, I'm going to give them these names. One is compassion, and the other is call. Compassion and call. This first one is compassion. Go into this world. He sends them, go into all these different towns, travel, and find people who are hurting and broken and twisted, and show them compassion. Pray for them, and I will heal them through you. Pray for them, and I'll deliver them through you. All around this world are people, including you and I, who get twisted up and distorted because of sin, because of our own brokenness. You know it in your life. I know it in my life. I see what my life is like when I'm not following Jesus closely, when I'm not committed to Jesus, in a loving, consistent relationship with Jesus where I'm praying and reading the word and meditating on it and worshiping him and allowing him to speak to me. I know what my life becomes like. I begin to get dark and angry and twisted and depressed. And you know what happens in your life when you're not close to Jesus, when you let go of those times reading his word and meditating on what he said and did and praying. You know what happens. Maybe for you, it's that you begin to get more afraid of everything, more anxious about everything. Maybe for you, it's that you begin to get more, those things that you lean on become more addictions. Those desires you have begin to take control of you. Or maybe all of it happens. You get anxious, you get worried, you become addicted, you become angry. Maybe you just turn into a big mess. You know what happens to you, and then you look around our world, a world without God, a world that doesn't have Jesus. And is it any wonder why people are hurting and broken and twisted and confused and distorted? And what Jesus calls us to do, one of the very basic and simple things, of the two things he expects us to do, is to go into that world and show compassion to people who are hurting and broken, bringing his healing into their lives by showing them that compassion. And sometimes it will look miraculous and supernatural. People read this sometimes and like, oh my goodness, you know, demons and things like that. And, you know, what am I supposed to do? And, you know, we talked about that a couple weeks ago and we showed you it's not just about, you know, people frothing at the mouth. It's about all the evil that holds us bound and going in and seeing that in someone's life and caring enough to not just walk by them, not just to ignore them, not just to do what everybody else at work or at school does with them and just kind of, yeah, okay. But to show them compassion, to step into their life, the way these disciples traveled around and stepped into these villages, step into their life and invest time and energy to show them the love of Christ. And you don't know what Jesus will do through you. You don't know how Jesus might heal them through you, restore them through you, rescue them through you. But this is of the two things that we are given by Jesus to do. Showing compassion is one of them. So if we want to know what we're supposed to do, what the right stuff is, take everything we do. If we're not showing compassion, then we're not doing what Jesus called us to do. So that's the first part. That's the first part of what it means to be the church. It means to bring the compassion of Christ into a broken world. But there's another part to it. And it's a part that makes it very, it sets this whole thing apart. Because otherwise we would look just like the Red Cross, going and being nice to people and caring for people. We'd look like just any other humanitarian organization. But the church is supposed to be so much more. We're supposed to not just be going and bringing compassion, but we're called to go and bring the call. The call to a new life in Jesus. The call to step out of the chains and the slavery you're in. It's the call to an exodus. Remember the people of Israel when they were slaves in Egypt? This massive exodus out into a new life. We're called to go and extend this call of an exodus to people to step out of this old life. Step out of your broken life. Step out of all this stuff that's weighing you down like chains wrapped around you and holding you a slave. Step out of that to call them to a new life in Jesus. Without that call, we're just another relief organization. Without that compassion, our calling is just an echo. It's hollow. It doesn't have any weight or meat to it. We need to put these two together. Whatever we do for our church to succeed, we've got to always have together this compassion and this call. The compassion of Jesus for people in their hurting and the call to turn around from sin and follow him in this new life. And all of the ministries, all the things we do here at church, they should either be expressing compassion and call or they should be equipping us for compassion and call. That's why life groups are so important. And I will just bang that drum all day long for life groups. Because in life groups is where we can learn and help each other learn and equip each other for the compassion and the call. We can wrestle with God's word and how to apply it to our lives. And that equips us to go and extend that call to other people and to show compassion. Through our life groups, we can give compassion. You can, as a group, go and invest in someone's life or care for a group of people who are hurting and in need. So that it's such a fundamental place for us as a church to make sure that we are learning and equipping ourselves for compassion and call. But then I look at the ministries we have, from our food pantry to our after-school program, Kids Place, to Compassion Immigration Ministries, to all the different things that our women's ministries does to invest in other groups outside and ministries outside, and to our men's ministries, doing things for people in our church who are in need. This whole going out and showing compassion and pairing that up with calling to Jesus. That's the stuff. If there's the stuff, if anyone's going to talk about our church, the stuff that they should talk about shouldn't be our building, shouldn't be our music or preaching or the kids' ministries. You can't stop people from talking about what they talk about, but that's not really what should be mostly impressive. What should mostly be impressive is our compassion and the clear call turn and follow Jesus and find life in him. Not to be the kind of people who are going around just trying to argue people into believing what we believe and think the way we think, but going around with a call, not an argument. Oh, here's four spiritual laws you've got to obey. Not an argument, but a call, like Jesus' call. It says, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke on you and learn from me. Like Jesus called in John chapter 7 when he says, anyone who comes to me, it's going to be like a river of life is bubbling up inside of them. It's like pour out of them. They're going to have life in them. It's a call to Jesus to find new life in him. We set aside sin and we follow him. That's what it means to be the church. That's the stuff right there. calling and compassion, compassion and calling. That's the what, but how? And that's the other question we're gonna wrestle with these next few weeks. How? How can we succeed as a church at being this, at having this right stuff? And the answer is, it depends. We depend on Jesus for two things, and those two things come screaming out through these two stories, the rest of what happens here. The first thing is this, it depends on Jesus for the power to show compassion and offer the call. It depends on Jesus for the power to do that. Look again at verses 1 in those first few verses. It says he gave them power and authority. And then he told them, and this might seem weird to you when you first read it, take nothing for the journey. No staff, no bag, no bread, no money, no extra shirt. Whatever house you enter, stay there until you leave. Well, what's going on there? What's all that about? Jesus is sending them out with nothing in their hands, nothing for the trip. Because they have to learn that the only thing they have when it comes to doing what Jesus called them to do, the only power they have, it's not in the stuff they bring with them. It's in Jesus. They can't rely on anything else. They got to rely on Jesus' power, not their money, not their getting to the right place in the town. So he tells them, don't bring an extra shirt. Don't bring a bag. Don't bring a staff to protect yourself. No money. No food. I read this and I began to remember all the different trips I would take the youth on. We'd go on like a winter retreat and kids would show up with like no clothes, no money. We were going to go out to eat. Oh, I didn't have any money. Oh, you'll have to pay for me, I guess. Nothing. No sleeping bag. No towel. I can't tell you how many times they showed up with no towel. And so you might read this and say, well, this just sounds like, you know, irresponsible teenagers, but it's not about being careless. This is a lesson Jesus is teaching them here in this first sending. It's a lesson that the power they need is going to come from him. And there are going to be times when they will be hungry and broke and they will have nothing and it won't matter. They'll still have the power they need to offer the compassion and the calling because it's not based on any of the human resources that they might bring to the table. That's why he tells them when you go there, just stay in the first house you get into. Because in their day, they were people all the time who would travel around from town to town, village to village, teachers, philosophers, healers. And what their whole goal was, they'd get into a town and, you know, hopefully someone would take them in. And then their goal would be to get the next richest person to take them in. And they'd want to work up the ladder in the town until they got the wealthiest person in the town to be their benefactor and support their platform, in the words of today. And that would be the whole goal. And Jesus says, that's not your goal. Your goal is not to get into that town and work your way to the top and so that you've got, you know, the wealthiest benefactor supporting your ministry. That'll make it all work for you. No, your goal is to rely on my power. So you just stay wherever, whoever first takes you in. You're not in there to get yourself comfortable. You're in there to serve me and accomplish my mission. You're there to offer my compassion and my call to new life. So this is Jesus training them to be the church. This is how they will do it, with his power. And that's the reality. We've got to depend completely and totally on Jesus for the power to do these things he's given us to do, the compassion and the call. There's nothing you and I can bring to the table that'll make us effective at that. There's nothing. I don't care how much you got in your bank account. I don't care if you're a Financial Peace University wizard. It won't matter for what Jesus wants us to do here to be effective. It helps. Jesus will take advantage and use all the resources we can bring, but our resources aren't where the power lies. The power lies in Jesus. And that doesn't mean it's wrong to prepare. That doesn't mean we should walk around carelessly and not get ready and not plan or not strategize, but it means we've got to remember that our planning, all our strategizing, all our efforts, all of our resources, that's not where the power lies. Those are just the tools we offer Jesus to work through in us. And ultimately, we could plant our church in a cardboard box in an alley and still be a successful, powerful church for Jesus as long as we were relying on his power and doing the two things he gave us to do, compassion and calling. As long as we were doing that. A great church depends completely on the power of Jesus because it knows that only Jesus' power can accomplish this mission of compassion and calling. We can't change people's lives. Our building can't change someone's lives. Our music, as wonderful as they do, it can't change people's lives. We can't change people's minds. We can't argue people or convince people or lure people into following Jesus. But look how nice life is when you've got Jesus. It'll make you happier. None of that. It's about us taking his power and using it to give his compassion in a way that actually transforms people in permanent and eternal ways, and offer the call in a way that people will hear it and it'll grab their heart and they'll turn and follow Jesus. I don't have words that can make that happen. You don't have words that can make that happen. Only Jesus can make that happen. And so to succeed, what's it going to take? A complete and total dependence on Jesus' power. That's what they learn here. That's what makes them successful here, is they depend on Jesus' power. And that's, for our church, what will make us succeed is never going to be powerful programs or beautiful buildings or anything like that. It's going to be when every single one of us, every leader, every volunteer, every member of our church completely depends on Jesus' power to offer compassion and offer the call to follow Jesus to people. It depends on that, Jesus' power. But there's a second thing. There's a second and amazing thing, amazing lesson that Jesus teaches the disciples here that to me is completely freeing, and it gives us, because it could be worrying to think about, okay, my whole life's going to be about offering Jesus compassion and calling, and that's what our church is about, and that's going to lead us into places that maybe sometimes aren't comfortable for us, and you might start to get worried about ourselves. But what about when I retire? What about, I'd like to not have a hard life. What about, and you start to worry about that stuff, and what's going to provide for you? And the second lesson in this feeding of the 5,000 is a powerful lesson in the other thing we need to depend on Jesus for. Depend on him for provision, to provide what we need. Most of the time, if I were to bring up the feeding of the 5,000 story to you, and those of you who've been around church in a while, the first thing that would pop in your mind would be the little boy with his 5 loaves and his 2 fish, right? That's the picture. That's the picture when you were in kids' church and all that as a kid. It's the little boy with his 5 loaves and his 2 fish, and these 12 big brawny guys, a bunch of them fishermen, surrounding him saying, "Hey kid, can we have your fish?" And what's the kid gonna do, right? If you're surrounded by 12 guys asking for your fish and your bread. But this story isn't about a little boy. Did you notice Luke doesn't even mention him when we read it? Luke doesn't mention the boy at all, because Luke wants us to understand that this is a lesson to the disciples about the second thing they have to completely depend on Jesus for, and that is to provide for them. That's what's going on here. They had just come back from going town to town. I'm sure they were tired. They were excited. Things had been successful. They get back. They tell Jesus about all the people who had been healed, all the people who had been delivered, all the people who'd heard the call and turned and said, "Yeah, we want to follow Jesus too." They get back, and they're all excited, and Jesus says, "Let's get away for a little bit, guys, and go celebrate and relax. We're all tired." And so they try to do that, but probably because of how effective they had been, thousands of people are looking for Jesus now. And so it tells us 5,000 men were there, and that means you're going to add most of them were married, and a lot of them would have had kids. So picture somewhere over 10,000 people now chasing them down, wanting to Jesus. And what does Jesus do? Jesus stops, and he begins teaching them about God's kingdom and healing those who need healing. Teaching them about God's kingdom, the call, healing those who need healing, compassion. That's what Jesus does. And then, as he's doing that through the day, it starts to get late, and then the disciples are like, "We're hungry, we're tired, I'm sure all these people, let's get them out of here." And so they go to Jesus and say, "Come on, it's getting late, all these people need to go, they got to go find places to sleep for the night, they got to go find food, we all need to find food, so come on, Jesus, let's wrap it up here." But Jesus had a different idea. And looks at them and says, no. You feed them. Us feed them? What are you talking about, Jesus? We got 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. What's that going to do for all these people? We could try and go buy, but we're poor. We don't have money for that. We can't afford to buy food for all these people. It's ridiculous. What they should have said in that moment was, "Oh, well, Jesus, you did just give us power and authority And we did just have this trip to all these different towns, and like we prayed for people and they were healed and they were delivered and we saw amazing things happen. So I guess this is just the next step. I guess this is just the next thing. Okay, Jesus, we'll go feed everybody. That's what they should have done. But they didn't. They failed the test. They failed the test. They had gone through the lesson. They had received that power from Jesus. They'd gone to all the towns, passed all the midterms and quizzes in every one of those towns. They get to the final test and the final exam, and it's a big one. You got to feed 10,000 plus people. I've never had a final exam that had 10,000 questions on it, but I'm sure it would have made me faint. What are they supposed to do? Well, they should have just said, oh, Jesus, this isn't about what we have. This is about what you give us. So, okay, well, let's go. But they didn't. They failed. And that's what the story is about. They failed in that first lesson to just utterly depend on Jesus for what he asks you to do. He will give you the power to do it. So they failed. But, Jesus didn't do what I know I would be tempted sometimes to do. A lot of parents are tempted to do when their kids are being stupid about something, or bosses will sometimes do. He didn't snatch the bread and snatch the fish out of their hands and say, oh, just give it to me and get out of the way. I'll do it. My mom once, she loves when I tell this story, she was watching one of my older brothers try and wash the dishes in the sink, and he was doing it all wrong, probably on purpose. And she said, oh, just get out of the way. Only an idiot could do this. My brother's like, oh, only an idiot, and you're doing, okay, I get it, Mom. Jesus didn't do that, though. Jesus didn't do that. Instead, he involved them, because Jesus wanted them to learn the second lesson, the second thing that's so important for you and I to grasp and understand, because it would save us from so much anxiety, that we can and we must completely depend on Jesus to supply our needs. That's what he wanted them to learn. So he had them sit all the people down in groups of 50 on the ground. And then Jesus took the bread and the fish and he held them up in the air and he broke them and gave thanks for them. And then he handed it to the disciples, who began to give it to the groups of people. And they kept doing that for however long it takes to feed 10,000 plus people. We don't know exactly how the bread multiplied. Did they have to keep going back to Jesus with their baskets and he would just keep giving them more bread? Or did he give them each some bread initially and then they would keep bringing it to the groups of people and then, you know, the basket would never empty. They'd give it to this group of 50. And then, okay, I got more left. And then they'd go to the next group of 50. We don't know exactly how it happened, but we do know that at the end, when it was all said and done and everybody had eaten, the disciples each had a basket full of bread for themselves. I don't know about you, but like when I go out to eat with Christina and we go to places like Legal Seafood that has really good rolls, you know the rolls there? Or Texas Roadhouse, come on, those. I just like pray, Jesus, let her not want bread. And if she ever says, oh, I don't want bread, I'm like, yes, it's all mine. The whole basket is mine. They walk away from this moment and they've got the whole basket of bread, each one for themselves. And in that, they learn that Jesus provides everything we need. He cares about what we need. He knows what we need. And even though you may be tired and burned out, and maybe you just spent yourself for a few weeks on a trip giving compassion and calling people to Jesus, maybe you did all that stuff and now you're worn out and you want to get a break. And you're like, what am I going to do, Jesus? Oh, I got to do more. And Jesus is like, I know what you need. And he supplies it over and over and over again. So when it's all said and done, even though they failed to learn that first lesson, Jesus taught them the second one. They could depend on Jesus to provide for them. The church that learns this lesson succeeds. The Christian who learns this lesson succeeds. Jesus will provide everything we need to do what he calls us to do, no matter what it costs him. And we know that that's true, because of the other time when Jesus held up the loaf of bread and gave thanks and broke it. It comes toward the end of Luke, at the end of this journey to Jerusalem. Here we are, it happens at the start. Jesus breaks bread and gives thanks. And then at the end, in that upper room, the night Jesus was about to be betrayed and then the next day crucified, But in that room that night, Jesus took the bread with his disciples and he broke it and he gave thanks. And he told them, this time it wasn't about feeding people bread. He told them, this bread is my body that will be broken for you. Not so that you can be temporarily satisfied in your hunger appetite, but so that you can have new life and be completely restored and have everything you need for eternity. So Jesus went, and in the ultimate expression of compassion and calling, he sacrificed himself for you and for me and for everyone who walks the face of this earth. And he climbed up that hill and he climbed onto that cross where they hung him. It says in John chapter 3, if I be lifted up, I'll draw all men unto me. Jesus standing there, nailed there to that cross, is the ultimate call. Come to me. Look what I'm doing. I'm taking all this sin that holds you slave. I'm putting it on my shoulders and I'm killing it. I'm going to bury it. Look at me. That's the ultimate call right there. It's the ultimate act of compassion right there. We know that if Jesus did that, he will do anything to supply all the power and all the provision we need to succeed at being his people, to succeed at being his church, to succeed at being his brothers and sisters. We know he'll give us everything we need. And sometimes we live these lives that are so frustrated because we're trying to live for our agenda and for God's agenda, sort of, and we kind of go back and forth, and we're not focusing on just the two things he's given us to do. Or we're trying to do those things, but we're doing it with our power. We're trying to supply ourselves, and we're just not living in this freedom he calls us to as a church and as individual followers of Jesus. What will it mean for us as a church? What will it mean for you as a follower of Jesus to adopt his agenda completely and say, I'm living to show that compassion and to offer that call wherever I go, and I'm going to depend on him for the power and the provision along the way. I'm not going to let myself be consumed about worrying about all the other stuff. I'm not going to let myself be consumed with anxiety and fear about all the other stuff. I'm not going to let that stuff distract me so that I'm spending 90% of my time building my little kingdom and a little bit of time in his kingdom. We're going to make our lives, our church, about his purpose, his call. What does the church who succeeds do? It depends. It depends completely on Jesus for the power to show healing compassion and to make this call to people to find new life in Jesus. And it depends on him to provide everything we need along the way. Worship team, would you come back? This is what I want our church to be. This is what I want our church to focus on. I want this to guide everything we do. This is what I want to guide my life and your life. It really is so simple. If you ask, what are you supposed to do? What does it mean to be a Christian? It means to do what Jesus did everywhere he went. He helped people see God's new creation and what God was doing and called them to follow him into this new life. And he had compassion on them. He healed them. He cared for their needs. He stepped into their world. He touched people all through the book of Luke here that we've been reading through this whole year. You see constantly Jesus stepping into people's lives, touching those no one else would touch, spending time with people no one else would spend time with. It means doing that. It means doing that. It's not rocket science. It's this loving compassion of Jesus. And so I don't know where you are. I invite you as we sing this closing song to just examine yourself and say, God, am I about your agenda or am I about my agenda? Am I about building your kingdom or am I about building my own little kingdom? Am I about keeping myself safe or am I about going out and doing what you've called me to do, trusting that you've made me secure? What am I depending on, Lord? Am I frustrated because I'm depending on my own resources? Am I frustrated because I'm trying to supply all my own needs and not trusting you? Ask him to just talk to you about yourself and about you, how we can be the kind of church, the kind of Christians that succeed for Jesus. Lord, as we sing this song, I pray you'd help us to realize again and again that it's not ever about anything we bring. It's never about what's in our hands or in our arms. But the best we can do is come to you with just arms open wide and say, here I am. Take me, use me. I want to serve your cause. I want to serve your kingdom. I want to go into this world and I want to bring compassion. Lord, there are people in my life, around in my circles that I know who need your healing compassion, and I want you to use me to bring it to them. There are people who are bitter and angry who I know need to hear your call to new life in you. And Lord, I want your power to be able to bring it to them. And Lord, I want to experience that in my life. I want us to be the church, to be the people who, first of all, experience your power to transform us in our own lives, but then take that and bring it to others as well. We come to you, Lord, our arms open wide.